This is a special edition of the RTI Press Pass powered by Rocky Top Insider. Here are your hosts, Jack Foster and Ryan Shumper.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back into the Rocky Top Insider Press Pass Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Jack Foster, joined alongside Ryan Shumpert on this Sunday evening. A really pretty day in Knoxville today. It was welcome, too, because the last couple days haven't been too great. It's been a little muggy, a little rainy, but today was sunny, and it was a great day here in the 865. But today we're going to be breaking down Tennessee's series sweep over Bowling Green, Tennessee baseball. That is a dominant weekend from Tennessee on the diamond as they have now won 10 consecutive games, sitting at 11-1. But first, before we get into it, Ryan, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, yeah. And I couldn't help but comment about the weather because it feels like it was two just completely different types of weather when the series began on Friday and concluded on Sunday. Probably 20 degrees warmer, much sunnier. So doing well. Busy weekend of travel with basketball, but glad to be able to make it over to Lindsey Nelson Stadium today. Only game of the weekend that I was able to be at and watch. I listened to game one driving down to Birmingham, but limited takeaways and for me and more from you this week.
Well, many are saying that you saw the best game of the weekend, right? I mean,
I think I probably did.
You probably caught the best game of the season today, I would say.
Yeah, I would say so. At least for the Tennessee side of things. So, yeah, an exciting one down in Tuscaloosa, and I guess a little bit better than three run rules up in Knoxville.
Yeah, obviously tongue in cheek because Tennessee a 10 run win that lasts over 3 hours and only goes 7 innings is far and away from being the best game of the season. So Ryan caught the worst game of the series, but it was a good day. And, you weren't up too late two nights in a row as Tennessee basketball kept you up Saturday night. But Ryan, you're going to be facilitating the conversation more today since I was there all three games. Where you want to start?
Yeah, let's start with the pitching. To me, that felt like the biggest storyline of the weekend. AJ Russell doesn't throw after suffering some side soreness last week against UAlbany, and Tennessee kind of playing things cool. They go to AJ Causey, who's been the guy that's followed him up on Friday nights. Seemed like he was really good. And then obviously Drew Beam on Saturday. That's kind of been the one staple in the rotation at this point in the season. And then on Sunday, they mix it up too and go Derek Schaefer getting the start. So Tony Vitello's tried a bunch of different things with the pitching staff and put guys in different roles. Just felt like the first weekend that we've really seen some major change with the starting pitching. So just, I guess, what were your biggest takeaways from some of those changes and how those guys performed?
Yeah, and obviously Causey started because of Russell's soreness. So, we'll see if that continues and if Causey has earned himself more starts, because arguably the biggest takeaway of the weekend was Causey's performance. It was the best start Tennessee has had from a pitcher this season. It was tremendous. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. 7 innings pitched, only gives up one hit, and it's a solo home run. Did walk a guy too, but he only faced one over the minimum because the guy he walked actually got picked off, really quickly at first by Cal Stark. So he only faced one batter over the minimum in his 7 innings of work and allowed 2 base runners. It was nearly flawless outside of the one home run there. It's very hard to pick any holes of what Causey's performance there on Friday night. So, I mean, we've seen Causey 3 times now. Lights out against Texas Tech in relief after AJ Russell, arguably the best player in that game. He and Russell were both fantastic. Yeah. Last week, he's the third guy because Stamos has to go in early because Russell's dealing with soreness, and it's a little rocky there against UAlbany. And then this weekend, it's the best he's looked. So I think so far this season, you have to say that Causey has been, probably, I don't want to say the biggest surprise, as we all thought he was going to be a big part of this, pitching staff, but definitely maybe someone that's going to have a bigger, more significant role than we thought.
Yeah, I think maybe the two things that stand out about him, and they went kind of hand in hand in the start, was one, just how quick he works. I mean, listening to it on the radio, I mean, he's just firing pitches.
Firing,
boom, boom,
yes.
Boom. I mean, Camden Sewell is the guy that I think is the fastest in my time covering Tennessee, has worked the quickest. And I don't know. Kazi seems competitive with him and kind of, I guess it doesn't go necessarily hand in hand, but kind of similarly, the fact that he threw 78 pitches and pitched seven innings. Like he was just so efficient. And the fact that he did that when, what was it, nine strikeouts? Like, that's pretty wild. And again, I think the question with him, and as it will be with everybody, because you're going to be judged on what you do against SEC competition, is how does the Jacksonville State transfer, how does it work for him against some better competition? But considering Texas Tech, arguably the best offense Tennessee's faced this year, and is, you know, was so good in that game, I think you just have to be overly pleased with what he's given Tennessee. And I don't know, he continues to be a guy that I think makes a lot of sense for that third starter spot for Tennessee.
Well, here's the thing about the third starter spot, and we saw Tony experiment for the first time, as you mentioned, starting Derek Schaefer on day three rather than Xander Seacrest. I don't think there's a question at this point that A.J. Causey is a top three pitcher for Tennessee. And Nate Snead, it's really a top four to me of Beam, yeah, Causey, Russell, and Snead. Because, and Snead and Causey are so different, it's kind of hard to really say which one has performed better so far. But you have those four guys, but keeping Snead and Causey in the bullpen is going to be so huge for Tennessee in big games down the stretch in SEC play. You know, of course, in the postseason, you look at what happened with Chase Burns and what's happened with Camden Sewell in the past. Having a great go-to bullpen option has really transcended some of Tennessee's seasons, especially last year. So if they can keep those two in the bullpen, that'd be a luxury for them. I just don't know if they're going to have a dependable third guy to start Sundays to where you can do that. And as of right now, it feels like Causey would be the easiest to put as the day three starter. I think you want to keep that velo in the pen from Snead. And whereas Causey, you know, he's shown he can start and be fantastic at it.
We'll skip over Drew Beam on Saturday for a second because your dependable comment made me think of it. But two guys that we've kind of pointed out as possible guys, if things develop the way Tennessee wants them, that could be a third starter for them by the postseason. Starter or freshman, right-hander Derek Schaefer, he gets to start today. Left-hander Matthew Dallas, not a great outing for either of those guys. Schaefer was probably better than Dallas, but just kind of what did you think about Schaefer's first weekend start and just kind of those two guys not taking, you know, firm steps forward this weekend necessarily?
Yeah, I mean, the way Tony kind of prefaced how he was going to manage his pitching staff on Sunday when he was talking to us Saturday night is it was going to be a bullpen game and, you know, it was only going to be an inning or two per pitcher. So, and he kind of, you know, acknowledged that during our media availability with him Sunday too after the game is that, you know, maybe Schaefer only thought he was getting an inning, so he wasn't quite prepared or quite all the way ready to go back out there for two. Maybe it was a little bit of a surprise, but I mean, he looked really good in the first inning, you know, stress-free first inning, and then kind of gives up those two runs there in the second. But I didn't think Schaefer was necessarily bad, but Matthew Dallas couldn't find the strike zone. And that's now two appearances in a row where he's really struggled with his command. So that's a bit worrisome. Vitello expressed some optimism that, you know, he'll be able to figure it out. And, you know, he probably will. He's very talented. He looked so good against UAlbany, and he only faced one batter in Arlington, but it was in a high leverage moment. And he came through for Tennessee. So I do think there's still a high ceiling with Matthew Dallas. And Derek Schaefer so far has looked, you know, okay. I wouldn't say he's looked good. I wouldn't say he's necessarily looked bad. It's been a little bit of hit or miss. But I don't know if what those guys have shown you so far, you can be pretty confident in them being a day three guy. They need to show more.
Yeah, I think that you hit the nail on the head there. It doesn't feel like they can't possibly grow into that by the end of the season, but when you're talking about what it's going to look like at the start of SEC play, it feels pretty unlikely. And I thought Tony had a good quote on Dallas where he was like, you know, he hasn't given up a hit to this point in the season.
Right.
And he's like, Frank Anderson's best pitchers, man, they're giving up hits. That's the cost of doing business.
Yeah, look at Drew Beam.
You're pounding the exactly. You're pounding the strike zone. And obviously for Dallas, the issues have been walks to this point. And mentioning Drew Beam, we'll move on to Drew Beam's performance. This is Saturday game, so one game that I really didn't pay much attention to at all. So all I have is the stats to go off of. Kind of seemed like a vintage Drew Beam performance. Maybe a few more strikeouts than normal. Six innings pitched, one earned run on five hits, one walk, nine strikeouts. What did you think about Drew Beam in game two of the series?
Yeah, it was the best he's looked this season. I did not think he looked good in Arlington, and last week was, I would say, an average Drew Beam performance. This was a really good Drew Beam performance. He gave, you know, season best in hits allowed with 5. Obviously had the 9 Ks. That's high for Beam. His career high is 10. He's hit that 3 times, so that tells you that 9 is a pretty high number for him. And he told us post game that he had everything working, and he agreed that it was his best performance of the season. The curveball was nasty, and he had the fastball working too. So, yeah, Drew Beam looked like the second half of 2023 Drew Beam, if that makes sense, which in my mind is the best version of Drew Beam. He looked really good, and I think that's encouraging because I didn't quite think he had been Drew Beam so far until Saturday.
It feels like that changeup's the key. I saw a tweet, and I don't have it in front of me, but the whiff rate on the changeup was really, really good in his start on Saturday, and that's what made the difference for him last year. And when you see his high strikeout games, that's usually why. And I mean, he's such a good pitcher in the sense that his pitchability and his being able to get outs and know how to get outs when he doesn't have his best stuff, but the changeup feels like the real X factor for him. And when he has that on, he goes from being a good weekend starter in the SEC to truly being an ace and one of the best guys in the conference.
Yeah, to being pretty dang dangerous. Yeah, I mean, yeah. And when you consider what causing, and I know it's Bowling Green, and, you know, Tennessee run ruled them every single game, but when you consider what Causey and Beam did those back-to-back nights, I mean, I know Tennessee's pitching isn't going to be as good as it's been in the past couple of seasons, but that's up there as, you know, that's what we're used to seeing from starting pitching from Tennessee. What Causey and Beam did on Friday and Saturday, very encouraging going forward. Especially considering that, you know, AJ Russell's going to come back and you got Nate Snead. So there's a lot of dudes there.
No doubt about it. And moving into the bullpen a little bit and kind of into Tuesday's game against Kansas State, you know, Tony Vitello, we know he's not a fan of the run rule, and he had some frustrations or expressed some frustrations about it post game on Sunday. And, you know, I kind of, as a guy that likes the run rule a lot, you know, I kind of empathize with him because you play 8 innings on Friday, you get 7 from your starter. You play 7 innings on Saturday, you get 6 from your starter. And then today, it felt like we don't see Nate Snead today. I guess that's the, I'm burying the lead.
Yeah,
that's
a big takeaway.
Part. We don't see Nate Snead, it's been Xander Seacrest getting the starts on Sunday, but it's been Nate Snead, it's been the guy Tennessee's been asking to get the majority of the outs. Now, feels like he'll have a very heavy workload on Tuesday when Tennessee faces Kansas State, probably behind that Texas Tech and Oklahoma game, probably the hardest non-conference game they'll play this season. So a big game. It felt like they were saving Snead for that. And because they only used Dylan Loy out of the bullpen on Friday and then Aaron Combs for 9 pitches out of the bullpen on Saturday, they were trying to get as many guys work as they could possible on Sunday. And then things get a little dicey in that 7th inning. And luckily for Tennessee, its offense picked him up and still got the run rule. But it was almost like in a game they were trying to save Nate Snead for Tuesday, they got pretty close to having to use him. He was up warming up in the 7th inning. So Tennessee uses a bunch of guys. I don't know if anybody stood out to you out of the bullpen on Sunday. And just, you know, like I said, I kind of empathize with Tony Vitello trying to manage a bullpen in a game that might be run rule, might not be a run rule, and trying to get everybody some work.
Yeah, it was a weird situation, right? I mean, the bottom of the 6th, Tennessee does what it needs to do. They go up 12 runs, and it's like, okay, 3 outs away from, you know, a run rule. And Xander Seacrest doesn't have it. Austin Hundley struggles. And then, as you mentioned, Tennessee was able to at that point in the game, it was kind of odd because they had pinch hit so many guys, and they basically just had an entirely new lineup outside of 2. Well, fortunately for Tennessee, I think who was due up in the bottom of the 7th were Tennessee's best hitters in the lineup at the time, with Dreiling and Bargo and Backus, who walked off 2 games, you know, run rule walk-offs, walk-offs, but run rule walked off. He did that twice this weekend on Friday and Sunday. But as for the bullpen, it's got to be Marcus Phillips, who has looked the most consistent. You know, he had a 1-2-3 inning, you know, only gave up 1 hit, had 3 Ks. You know, he's going to have some wild pitches here and there. That's just the type of pitcher he is. But I do think he's going to be a pretty valuable bullpen option for Tennessee this season. And then you got to tip your hat to Kirby Cannell, who actually got the win for his performance. Only pitched 1 inning, but got Tennessee out of a jam there after Matthew Dallas had walked a couple of guys. So, yeah, I mean, Kirby's Kirby, so there's no news there. But Marcus Phillips was probably the name that stood out most, and I'm sure you would echo that sentiment.
I would, yeah. It just feels like not something that Tennessee doesn't have necessarily, because Nate Steed's kind of similar. Tennessee just doesn't have a lot of those power arms in their bullpen, and Marcus Phillips can 100% be that, and you're right, he's wild. You worry about the command, and Cannon Peebles, we talked to him, and he kind of touched on some of that of trying to take it one pitch at a time with Phillips, but he was really good, and I think the fact that he did it through two innings is encouraging. But with like a lot of these guys, a lot of these young guys, obviously he's a JUCO guy, not a freshman, but it's going to be about seeing it consistently. He was good. Again, I thought Andrew Binkie was good. You know, I think
Binkie's been really good.
When Schaefer went out in the second inning and got two outs, and I feel like I've probably said this about Binkie before, Tennessee's got so many options in left-handed options in the bullpen that he might not have a massive role, but he's a guy that I like a lot and I think can help this team if injuries happen. And certainly down the road is going to be good. Moving on to the offense, you scored 39 runs in three games. A lot of guys had good weekends, but it felt like the two guys that led the way there were the two highly touted transfers. Cannon Peebles, mentioned him a minute ago. We talked to him today, and then Billy Amick. Just what did you see from those guys?
Yeah, I mean, Amick just keeps hitting home runs. He loves it. He's up to seven on the season, and he didn't have the best day of Sunday, so I'd have to think back to Friday and Saturday to really – you know, think back to what a great weekend he truly had, but he's Tennessee's best hitter. And I don't think that there's a big question mark at this point. I mean, Simo's really consistent. We've seen Burke and Peebles be really good. Top of that lineup is dangerous. It is going to be very, very dangerous this season, but Amick is just on another level and he's making good defensive plays to boot. So he's just, I mean, he is as advertised and more. I think we all kind of agreed that, you know, or at least you and I agreed that he was Tennessee's best transfer portal land this past offseason, and he's living up to that. And, you know, like I said, he's just one of Tennessee's best players. So expect what Billy Amick has done to continue.
Yeah, I mean, he had a pretty quiet day today. Goes 1-4 at the plate, and he still finishes the weekend hitting .667. I mean,
he was 6-6 entering Sunday at the plate with a couple walks. That was his first – he got out for the first time today, which is crazy.
It is pretty crazy. Even against Bowling Green, you don't see something like that very often. And while he's been fantastic the whole season, I think no doubt really encouraging what Cannon Peebles has given Tennessee this weekend and really this whole week. He doesn't start on Friday as Cal Stark is behind the plate. I can't remember if he DH'd or not against High Point, but he was in the starting lineup against High Point. And then started behind the plate these final two games. Yeah, so multiple hits in all three games this week. Three hits today and a walk. It kind of feels like he's turning the corner.
Yeah, it's not as splashy as Amick or even the weekend Burke had because he's not hitting home runs. He doesn't have one yet. But he's turned into, we knew he was going to be one of Tennessee's best hitters, but he's really shown it and kind of broken out of a little mini slump he had there to start the season. As you said, three straight multi-hit games. His average, I think, is above .250 now, above close to .350 it should be. So, you know, he's back up in there and he's raking for Tennessee right now. And he has a firm spot in the middle of that order, I think, on most weekends. And, you know, we have seen Cal Stark get quite a handful of weekend starts so far, but I thought Tony Vitello's comments on Cannon Peebles today was telling because he talked about how Cannon Peebles is, you know, he's an everyday guy, but we're wanting to save him given the position he plays and all this other stuff. We're wanting to make sure he is fresh come the heart of SEC play and, of course, the postseason. So that's probably why Stark has been getting more starts than maybe you or I would have expected. But I don't think it's, anything against Cannon Peebles because that's happening. It's just to keep him fresh. And now you see the production at the plate.
Oh, 100%. It's not only just, I think, to keep Cannon Peebles fresh. That's a huge part of it. But Cal Stark's been so good behind the plate and has seemingly such a good relationship and works so well with Tennessee's pitchers that it's been hard not to, for, you know, he's carved out a role. He's earned a role. And I think that's what's become fascinating is what it looks like in SEC play. Once you get into the heart of SEC play, how many starts is Cal Stark still getting a start a weekend? will they live with his bat in there? I think they probably do. But you know, when, like you just said, like Tony Vitello said, even if Cam Peebles isn't behind the plate, I think when SEC play rolls around, he's pretty locked into that DH spot. I just don't think you're going to take that bat out of the lineup.
Which is interesting, because if that's the case, I do think Cal Stark will end up starting one game a weekend at catcher. As you said, he's earned it. He's great defensively. He has, you know, a great relationship with pitching staff. So when that's the case, and Cannon's at DH, presumably, does that mean Robin Villeneuve's out the lineup? And, you know, maybe he didn't have, I mean, he had a great weekend, another one, but he didn't, he wasn't as good as some of the other guys we've been talking about. But, you know, Robin's been one of Tennessee's best hitters. So how do you take that guy out of the lineup? I think that's a conversation you have to have. So there's a ton of bats that Tennessee has right now. And there's about six or seven that have just been crazy dangerous. And that's a great thing to have.
It really is. And that leads me into what next thing I was going to say. Tennessee's outfield, not that we expected it, but we don't get any clarity on what that's going to look like this right. weekend. Five different guys start games in the outfield. We even saw Reese Chapman get a start today. Everybody was pretty solid for the most part. Bargo hits 444, has a couple doubles. Dreiling had a big home run today. He hit 444. Kavaris Tears remains really good. The one guy I do want to give a shout out to or some praise, just because we, you know, discussed his struggles last week, Hunter Hensley. It kind of felt like he maybe found something a little bit this weekend. He goes 2-for-6 at the plate, I believe. Yes, 2-for-6 at the plate, two walks, starts the first two games, doesn't start today, but comes in a big spot in a pinch hit opportunity with the bases loaded in two outs. I guess in that sixth inning when Tennessee originally got the lead up to 12. And he works a really good at bat. I mean, and Tony Vitello talked about it kind of being, it epitomizing what Hensley is as a player, with the way he fought off a number of two-strike pitches and got a walk. It felt like a strong and a very needed bounce-back weekend for Hunter Hensley.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I think the two starts were telling of, it's not like Hunter Hensley had lost his job. And we mentioned that last week. That was not the case. You know, he only started one game in the Albany series, but that wasn't the case at all. He started 2-of-3, as you said, probably had the best at bat of the day today, getting that walk. I think it was a double digit pitch at bat. I would probably put it in the 10-to-12 range. Yeah, look, here's the deal. If Hunter Hensley is your 9-hole hitter and he's a really good center fielder defensively, that's great, because he's going to be better than most other teams' 9-hole hitters. He's not a bad hitter. So, he was second in batting average last year in SEC play, right?
In SEC play, yep. Behind Jared Dickey.
So there you go. Yeah, I think he bounced back. You can lump him in a little bit with Cannon Peebles, probably to a lesser degree for Hunter Hensley, but of guys who really bounced back and had productive weekends at the plate.
He did, and it's going to be so fascinating how this irons out, and the fact that you have Cannon Peebles going to almost certainly take one DH spot in the weekend. It's going to be really interesting to see how Tennessee juggles this. Kavaris Tears continues to look capable playing center field if they need him to. I almost wonder if there's a stretch where Hensley is struggling at the plate, if it's one of those things where he starts two games at a weekend out there, and whatever game Cal Stark starts behind the plate, KT moves over to center to kind of keep the offense at maybe a little higher clip. But at the same time, I mean, it's just what you said. It's not like Hunter Hensley's, we talk about it in this way, and you would think, you know, Hunter Hensley's like a bad hitter or something, and he's not.
Yeah.
He's a really solid contact hitter, maybe not the leadoff guy that Tennessee had maybe hoped early in the season, but a good bounce-back weekend for him, and it's going to continue to be really, really interesting to see how that outfield shakes out.
Yeah, I think in your scenario, that's a good call of when Cal starts and Cannon's at DH, do you move Tears to center and then get a bat like Robin Villeneuve out in the outfield? I think that Dylan Dreiling is going to be an everyday guy. I think Tony's just experimenting here early parts of the season, but Dreiling feels like an everyday guy to me. So does Tears. So it's really that third outfield spot that would be kind of up in the air, whichever corner outfield spot Villeneuve would occupy, or Bargo, you know, one of those guys. But when you think about Villeneuve too, it's going to be really hard to take his bat out if he continues at this rate.
Exactly, and I think that's the thing. And Bargo's been good too, but I think it's easy to say, and this is a good option, just because you have Bargo as a lefty and Villeneuve as a righty, to go lefty-righty with who's in the lineup. but you just run into more right-handed pitchers. And to me, I like Villeneuve's bat almost, you know, just about as much as anybody on the team behind Amick and Moore to this point. So I don't know. To me, that's going to become really interesting. We'll get more looks at it this week. One more week for Tennessee. I got six more games before they open SEC play at Alabama in 2 weekends, and a little bit better competition this week. Kansas State on Tuesday, Southern Indiana on Wednesday. That's right.
Yep. Yeah, that's the Screaming Eagles, right?
The Screaming Eagles. And then Illinois comes to Lindsey Nelson Stadium for a 3-game set next weekend. And Illinois, a middle-of-the-pack Big Ten team. You expect Tennessee to take care of business, at least winning 2 games, if not getting a sweep. But some better competition than what they've seen the past couple weekends. Jack, any final thoughts that you had from this weekend?
Yeah, I got to shout out Blake Burke. I mean, he hit 3 yes. home runs, 1 on Friday, 2 on Saturday. Actually, funny, he said that he had never gone back-to-back with someone before, as in back-to-back home runs. Friday, it happens in the 5th inning, I believe, when Blake Burke hits a home run, and then Billy Amick follows it up with one. And then Saturday, to lead off the game, after Bowling Green's leadoff hitter went yard, and in his first day, be at the top of the first, the bottom of the first, Simo, bang, home run. Blake Burke, home run. They went back-to-back. So before this weekend, Burke had never gone back-to-back with someone, and then it happened back-to-back days for him going back-to-back. So shout out Blake Burke. I think he struggled a tad in Arlington, but ever since then, he's been really good. And, you know, his home run total is up to 4, I believe, on the season, maybe 5. And he's, you know, firmly in that 2-hole, I think, now. Tony did not experiment with that top 4 order of more Burke, Amick tiers. So I think you're going to see that moving forward, and rightfully so. That's a really strong 4.
Yeah, that's a good point. I meant to bring him up earlier and forgot about it. Just a huge weekend for him. 6-12 at the plate. You mentioned it. 3 home runs, a team best, or tied for a team best with Dylan Dreiling. 6 RBIs, and then 2 doubles to go along with it as well. He had a double RBI double in the second inning with Tennessee leading 4-2 on Sunday. So another big hit for him. And I think improved defensively for sure, too. Not a perfect defensive player either, but definitely has taken some major steps forward there in the offseason.
Yeah, I think that's a underrated development so far of Tennessee's season, is how good their infield defense has been. We knew Inslee, Tears, some of those outfielders were really good defensively, but as good as Amick's been, Curley's made some plays. I mean, Burke, I don't think he's made maybe just one bad play so far, and it was in a midweek. He committed an error. But, yeah, those 3 guys have been great, and then you know what Simo is. So the infield defense has been really solid, and Burke has improved big time over there at first.
It's night and day for Tennessee defensively and base running-wise compared to where they were last year. Just so much more polished. And some of that, you know, is a lot of those guys are – returning starters and played in these spots last year, but at the same time, Billy Amick did not play much third base, was mostly a DH last year at Clemson. Dean Curley is a true freshman. He didn't have a huge weekend at the plate. Wasn't that he was bad necessarily. He made a fantastic play. Was that second or third inning today?
Tennessee got out of
a jam. He continues to be just really impressive for a freshman at shortstop. So a lot to like there, a lot to like with Tennessee's defense as they pushed their winning streak to 10 games this afternoon.
Yeah, fun fact, Blake Burke leads the team in stolen bases right now. Bet you didn't have that on your bingo card 3 weeks into the year. How about it?
No, I didn't have that on my bingo card. I will say I think Tennessee finishes anywhere higher than 12th in the SEC in stolen bases this year, I will be floored. This team has got very few weaknesses, I think, a lot of strengths. Base dealers, not a big strength for this team.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, that'll wrap it up for this Sunday night edition of the Rocky Top Insider Press Pass Baseball Podcast. Ryan, are you going to be in LNS, what, Tuesday and Wednesday?
Tuesday, I'll be Columbia for basketball on Wednesday.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely be there Friday and Sunday. Maybe might swing by on Saturday before basketball, though. Won't be able to stay for the whole game.
Right. Well, as Ryan said, the schedule gets a little tougher, so that means, you know, a lot more innings for us to have better takeaways from, I guess, lack of a better phrase there. But, yeah, competition gets tougher, and then Alabama is right around the corner, who I believe they're undefeated right now. And
Yeah, they had a good weekend. They played in a tournament in Frisco this weekend, and they were pretty impressive. So
I know they
maybe a matchup that's going to look harder than it did at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, especially since it's on the road. But anyway, that'll wrap it up for this Sunday night edition. Until next time, that's Ryan Shepherd. You can follow him at rshump00. That's RSCHUMP. And you can follow me at Jack Foster Media. And of course, keep it locked in over at Rocky Top Insider on all your social media platforms and over at RockyTopInsider.com for all your Tennessee coverage needs. That's Ryan. I'm Jack. Till next time, everybody have a great week.